Quaker Show, where liberty is our mission. Today is Tuesday, February 12th, 2013. This is podcast number 271. My name is Ben Stone, and with me is my sometime co-host, Kai.
Hello.
And go ahead.
Did you change the name, The Bad Quaker Show?
Well, sort of. Through influence of the Freedom Fiends and Michael Dean and Nima Vedotti, they're in the process of trying to get their show on the radio. And so they're encouraging me to make my podcast sound more radio-ish and move away from, you know, internet talk, because someday they want to eventually get so famous that they can drag me along with them back onto the radio.
Ah, I see.
So we're
You're
just trying to
abandoning your internet followers for the glamorous Hollywood lifestyle.
Yeah, we don't need them. Yeah, so we're just trying to keep things sounding a little bit more professional, and plus we have a lot of new listeners. A lot of new listeners are coming in every day. We had we're having almost record numbers on our website. And that's considering that, you know, I've been traveling now since December and haven't been consistently putting up podcasts.
Yeah, I heard Michael Dean making fun of you for that on the Anarchy Gumbo podcast the other day.
Yeah, the joke is that your mom and I are driving around, you know, because we have a little dog with us. We're driving around with our dog solving mysteries in a van.
Nice.
Which was really funny because the first time that Michael and I were talking about that on the phone, we were actually parked in a RV park that was right down the street from a closed amusement park.
Was Old Man Willikers in charge of it?
Probably was.
You wouldn't recognize him, though. He was wearing a mask.
He was wearing a mask. Dressed up like a ghoul.
Yes, exactly. So liberty and freedom and whatnot.
I should read this press release first because this is pretty important stuff, and it's by a friend, so I should do this press release before we get going. Here's my radio voice. Ready? Announcing the publication of Voluntary Islam and Other Essays by Davi Barker. Davi Barker's first book is officially being released on Tuesday, February 19th, in time for the New Hampshire Liberty Forum. The paperback will be available from Amazon.com and all major bookstores. The ebook will be free for the first 24 hours after release for the Amazon Kindle. And I'm really thrilled for Davi. He's a friend, and he even used my words on the desk cover, on the back desk cover. You know how they have, like, New York Times says blah, 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 and three thumbs up from blah, blah, blah. So Davi used my my statement about him as the on the back cover, on the desk cover. Pretty cool.
That's really cool. It's really awesome that he's doing it for free for 24 hours.
Yeah, there's a real advantage to that, too. If you can get enough people to download the ebook on Amazon, then it pops it up on lists when other people are searching for other items. So it's a real big, I hate to say it, but it would even help Davi if everybody went and downloaded it, even if you don't want it. Just download it and have it for later or whatever. And even if you're going to buy the book later or whatever, by a lot of people downloading it very suddenly in the first day, it causes it to pop up in Amazon searches for other people. So it's a real good way, to do a little activism there that doesn't really cost anything, and it boosts a fellow activist.
Well, and if you've downloaded it, you might as well read it.
Yeah.
You've got all that trouble.
Have you been following along on the crazy cop killing cop that the cops are chasing and shooting random citizens thinking that it's the cop killer?
I have not. However, I would like to point out that I am not the same homeless crazy hitchhiker Kai that attacked the dude with the hatchet, even though that Kai was really cool too.
There was a crazy hitchhiker named Kai who attacked someone?
Well, yes. He was a hitchhiker, and this guy picked him up, and then the guy stopped the truck, got out of the truck, and started beating this woman, and so the hitchhiker jumped out of the truck and attacked the guy with a hatchet.
Wow.
Yeah.
I did not hear about that story.
Yes. Quite interesting.
And the hitchhiker's name was Kai?
Yes.
How did they spell it?
K-A-I, the same way most people spell it.
Ah, I see. Yeah, so...
I just wanted to proclaim, not me.
You haven't taken a hatchet to anybody lately, huh?
Not lately.
This story with the cop in L.A. is... It has a lot of twists and ins and outs, and it's a very complicated thing. The cop was... He was a military veteran, had spent a lot of time overseas in battle situations, pretty tough guy, and came out, went to work for the LAPD, I don't think he made a full year, and got sent back into the military, sent back overseas, back into combat, came back to LA, went back to work as a cop, got sent back to combat again. So in 3 years of working for the LAPD, he had less than a year of actual duty, as a cop. And then he witnessed now he was in trouble because in the academy he had witnessed some kind of racial harassment and had turned it in, and so that made him get in trouble with the other cops, and he got disciplined for that. And then once he was out on the street and was actually, a cop, but still a rookie, he witnessed the officer that was supposed to be training him. He witnessed that officer beating somebody up and turned them in. And so one thing led to the other, and he got fired, because that's what they do when cops are, rat each other out like that. They fire him.
Right. Oddly enough, the same thing the mob does.
Pretty much, except
a little bit nicer.
Yeah. So they basically ruined his life, or at least he believed that they did. And this happened a couple years ago. And now all of a sudden he writes this manifesto, which really, if you read it, it doesn't sound as crazy as one would expect. I don't know how what degrees of crazy is a manifesto of a crazy person who kills people, but it's not as crazy.
Never sane.
Right. And he declares war on the LAPD. Oddly enough, though, he makes a statement in his manifesto that his beef is not with the U.S. government. He still fully supports the U.S. government, which I think is just, this would be hilarious if it weren't such a horrible, tragic thing.
Right.
That he doesn't see that, the mechanism that created the LAPD and that created them being what they are today is the same. I mean, it's all one big, giant, scaly monster. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
And yet these people, these statists that are so locked in, they might see that the one thing that they're working with is evil, but they fail to see that the bigger beast is hovering right over top of their head.
Yeah, and it's kind of sad, actually.
It really is. But that's the brainwashing that the state does for you. So you want to talk about Maker's Mark?
Hey, yeah, Maker's Mark. So they're diluting their bourbon now?
Yeah, very sad. Actually, they have always diluted it, but they are going to dilute it more.
You know, the more and more that we go forward, and more that I start thinking about things through an anarchist perspective, I see so many correlations between the world that we live in right now and the book 1984, you know, where they had all of these things. And it's particularly difficult not to make these associations working at a gas station because, you know, George Orwell talks about the lottery that they used in the 1984 setting, and the fact that nobody ever had sugar. They only had fake sugar. They had margarine. They never had butter, you know, all of these things. And the little tiny details, you look around and you're like, we're there. This is life.
Yeah, the quality of everything, you know, because whether we want to admit it or not, and I've talked about this a lot, the state in any form, governments around the world at any time are based at their core on socialism, on central planning, on the government maintaining the control of different aspects or more and more aspects of the means of production. And socialism always produces I should say it this way. Socialism never produces goods according to the supply and demand needs.
No,
it always
there are always gluts and shortages.
Yeah, yeah. So, and it destroys innovation. Socialism destroys innovation. So when you have the loss of innovation and you have gluts and shortages and you have a destruction of the price mechanism, which is what, you know, basically what socialist control of the money supply, whether it's in a fascist form like we have now with Federal Reserve or if it's, you know, some other type of socialism where like Greenbacker or whatever, where the government controls the money supply. One way or the other, it's still a socialist polluted market. And so the value of money is distorted. The value of goods and services are distorted. And this kills innovation. And no matter that humans tend constantly to want to make things better, the bigger and the more powerful the government gets, the more it pushes innovation down and pushes it down. So even though there's people, you know, trying desperately to innovate and make things bigger, the bigger and the stronger the government gets, the harder it is to do those things.
And the more it tilts the market towards goods and services that the government or the state wants. Some of our best innovators and scientists and idea people who could really truly be making a difference in the world are not because there's this huge demand by the state for weapons of war and technology that's war-based and all of these things. And so that puts a skew on the market too, because that takes away the supply of human intellect that could be going towards an open market.
That's precisely correct. We see it down here in these as we're traveling around in the motorhome. And as we stop in these different RV parks around, some of them have cable, you know, cable TV outlets. Some of them do not, so we have to put up the antenna. And there's this network called MeTV that's been prevalent throughout the South where we've traveled. And it plays a lot of old shows from the 50s, 60s, and 70s. And there's constant government ads on there, you know, from the, what is it called? The Ad Council?
The Ad Council. Yeah.
Yeah. And so there's constant government ads on this network. And, by doing that, what they're actually doing, you know, they try to convince people on how they want you to live. They want to tell you, you know, some of them, talk about like saving money and they have this pig and that's the thing about saving money. Others try to convince you of other ways that you are supposed to live your life the way that they want you to live your life. But every one of those commercials that's paid for by the government distorts the advertising market. It distorts the value and the price mechanism that would otherwise control commercials on television. And when you have a government commercial on television, that means you can't have, you know, a commercial for Joe's barbershop or whatever on the same spot.
Yep.
So you're doing two things. You're distorting the price by government, because the government doesn't care what it pays for something.
Right,
so you're distorting
stolen money.
Yeah, it's playing with stolen money. So you're distorting the value, you're distorting the price mechanism by having the government ad on TV, and you're denying allowing a businessman to put his or woman to put their ad on that same spot. So, you know, some small business, some car dealership or whatever could be running their ad there, but now they can't because it's either too expensive or the government's bought up all the spots. And so the only ads you see are ones for and oddly enough, because a lot of old people watch this network, this MeTV, a lot of old people are their demographic, then you not only get wave after wave of government ads, the ads that do get through are like AARP, or they're for some product. Exactly. And you hear over and over in these ads, even the ones that are not government ads, you hear things like, in a government backed loan, they want you to refinance your home, or not refinance it. They want a reverse mortgage. Yeah, exactly. And they always say, this is a government approved or a government backed program, and they throw that in there for the old people to soothe them. Because those are like magic words in ads for old people. If it's government approved or government regulated or government backed, then they get all warm and fuzzy about it.
Right. Well, and they also have all of those, like, you know, don't worry, you won't have to pay for this wheelchair. Insurance and Medicare will.
Yeah, that's a favorite. No cost to you, with no money out of your pocket.
Yeah.
No cost to me.
No out and of they get pocket all- expenses.
Yeah. Well, who's paying for that? Somebody's paying.
Actually, I just got into quite an argument the other day about that very thing, the idea of who's paying for it. Because I had told somebody that I was getting my refund back and that it included an earned income credit. And they got all bent out of shape about it. And they were like, well, that's great. They're giving money more than what they stole to people that didn't earn enough money. And they were like, that money is coming out of my pocket. And I was like, no, that's incorrect. You know, when you think about it, you think of the people who are on welfare or who are getting food stamps or whatever, you think, well, that's my tax money, but it's not. It's not your tax money. That money is not your tax money. Your tax money goes into the system and is immediately absorbed by the massive amount of debt, the massive amount of the United States government is spending so much money that it is far more than what they're getting in taxes. They're not getting anywhere near in taxes what they're spending. So the money that's going to the welfare moms or going to pay people earned income credit on their taxes, that money doesn't actually exist. It's fake money. It's monopoly
right.
money.
It's imaginary. Yeah, it's debt.
It's debt, exactly. And so you're not stealing money from anybody else's taxes. If anything, stealing money from everybody's collective money because of devaluation, but it's a drop in the bucket compared to what they're doing just to pay for the drones to kill people in Pakistan.
Yeah, I've often said that if you actually do the numbers, all of the money that they bring in from income tax does not pay the interest on the debt, just the interest on the debt.
Yeah. I don't know it to be a fact, but I wouldn't at all be surprised if what they bring in income taxes doesn't pay for the IRS.
That's possible. Or if you consider the IRS and Congress, if you just take those two things into account, and not just, I'm not just talking about the wages of Congress, but, you know, there are thousands. Yeah. There are thousands of people that are employed by Congress doing all kinds of nonsense that all it does is, you know, just encumber government even more.
And that's one of the biggest issues that I have with there's this, I think, right-wing conservative holdover mentality among the anarchist community where they think, oh, you shouldn't take anything from the government. You shouldn't accept any sort of handouts from the government. And I really think the opposite way. I really, really believe that if you do not want the government to stay in power, the state to stay in power, the best thing that you can do is give them as little as possible and take as much as possible from them. I mean, truthfully, that's how the United States won against the Soviet Union. We spent them into oblivion.
Yeah, very much. I'm going to go ahead and save this file. Okay. And we'll stick a commercial in here, although you're in radio, you're not supposed to say that. You're supposed to use this other code language. But anyway,
we'll be right back after a word from our sponsors.
Yeah. Tom Wood's Liberty Classroom is a collection of courses on history and Austrian economics. There are video and audio files you can download, you can participate in the discussion boards, and there are live sessions with Tom Woods and the other educators. Join Tom and his team and they'll equip you with one of the very best tools the Liberty Movement has to offer, knowledge. And you can get all this for just $99 a year. Go to badquaker.com, click on the banner for Tom Wood's Liberty Classroom, and by using this link, you'll let Tom know that I sent you and you'll help badquaker.com. Thank you. Thanks for sticking with us through the break. And Kai, you made an interesting point that I know a lot of people really disagree with what you said, that that essentially If you really hate the government, you're really an anarchist, you really think that the state is bad and you know, we shouldn't have a government, then you should basically get every penny you can from the government and give them as little as possible. And the only thing I would add to that is that you want to be careful in doing that, that you stay as independent as possible, not dependent upon what you can get from them.
Exactly. You want to take as much as possible, but you also want to be in a situation where if that goes away, you won't be affected.
Right.
And also don't get in their radar when you're doing this.
Exactly. The more underground you can be in everything in your life, the better you'll be.
Right. Because, I mean, the ultimate expression of taking as much as possible from the state is being in prison. They're literally taking complete care of you, but at the same time, you don't have any freedom there.
I know the concern, like you were saying, this is kind of a leftover thoughts from the conservative, you know, world.
Right.
But this idea
because
that
it is more likely for people to come into the world of anarcho-capitalism from the right-wing conservative Republican side.
Very often, not always, but very often, that's true. But the conservative does have a tendency to want to say, well, you know, I'm not taking anything from the government because that's somebody else's taxes that they've paid in. But the fact of the matter is, this government or any other government throughout history or in the future, the government will always take the maximum they can take, no matter what. If they can get away with taking 10% tax, they'll take 10. If they can get away with 50, they'll take 50. If they could get away with 100% tax, they would do it.
Right.
The problem is they are always trying to find this balance of where they can take as much as they can take without the people revolting. And sometimes they fall on one side or the other of that balance, but that's always what they're trying to do. And whether or not they give any of that money to anybody doesn't affect the fact that they're constantly going to be trying to take the maximum amount they can take.
Yep.
So if you can get some back in any way that's, you know, not going to endanger you, then you ought to do it.
Yeah, you really should. It's stealing from the slave master.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, that's your hard work that created all of that. And they have no right to any of it.
Yeah, you know, every brick, every stone that created all the you know the monoliths and the temple of Lincoln in Washington D.C.
The obelisk to Washington.
Yeah, which is a religious symbol, you know, is signifying parentage. How can Christians not be offended by that? That a religious symbol is raised in Washington, an age-old religious symbol, is raised in Washington to commemorate that the man that the city is named after. How is that not offensive to Christians?
Because Christians don't understand what that symbol is, which is why they have it on top of most of their churches.
Oh, oops, good point. I guess I kind of walked into that one, didn't I?
Yeah, a bit. But, you know, eh.
Hey, now we can't start offending all the Christians again. Didn't we do that in the last podcast?
I'm pretty sure we do. I'm a bad influence. I offend everybody.
I want to take us backwards a little bit because there was something I had it in my mind and I wanted to say it when we were talking earlier, but the flow went away from it. Back to government distortion of advertising and all that kind of thing. You know, your mom and I have talked quite a few times about these ads come on TV for these, for the power chairs or the reverse mortgage or whatever it is. And one of the things they do is they say, you can get this free travel mug if you buy a power chair with no money to you, no cost to you, and we'll give you a free travel mug. And it's a little plastic cup, you know, it's right. A little sippy cup. They're going to give the old people a sippy cup, and that's going to sway the decision as to whether or not they buy a power chair that costs thousands of dollars. But I got a sippy cup.
Hey, sippy cup's a sippy cup. Although the power chairs almost never have a cup holder, so what good is that?
the reverse mortgage, the ad for that, they offer you a magnifier with an LED light.
Did they just like? Is there an old people version of the Chinese catalog that's packed full of like little trinkets and toys for kids? You know the ones that I'm talking about? I don't remember what they're called.
Yeah.
They're like, oh look, an old people version, magnifying glasses.
I'm sure AARP has one of those.
Probably.
But you know, I was thinking about this also. The generation of old people that we have right now are, they've been brainwashed for their whole life to get to a certain age so that they can become completely dependent on government and just let government take care of them. I mean, that's what they've been taught since they were children.
Right.
Is that when they get to this age, the government will take care of you. So if you start to say something that against that or whatever, they get really scared and upset and maybe even angry.
Right.
But the thing I was thinking about is that the generation that's growing up right now that have never known anything other than the system that we have, when they get to be old people, I mean, if you consider the degree of dependency that old people today have, when the people that are 20 or 30 become 70, holy moly, think about how dependent they're going to be and how powerful organizations like AARP and things like that would be.
Well, all you really have to do is look at Egypt. That's exactly what will happen.
Yeah. You're talking about the backfiring and the revolution and all that, or you're talking about ancient?
You had a situation there where the majority of the young population was completely dependent on the state, and that dependency got yanked away and they revolted. And, you know, when we go one generation forward and the people who were young and dependent on the state now are old and dependent on the state, and their children have grown up completely dependent on the state, it's going to fall. You can't have that. You can't have no workers.
It's pretty scary. One of these commercials, I keep ranting about these commercials. One of them says it's a commercial for knee braces. Now, let that sink in for a minute. It's a television commercial for knee braces. And the commercial starts out and says, are you on Medicare? Then you probably qualify for a free knee brace at no cost to you. Now, the question is not, do you have knee pain? The question is not, you know, have you seen the doctor and the doctor says you need a knee brace? No, that's not the question. If you're on Medicare, you probably already qualify for a free knee brace.
And then it goes on to say, owed to you.
Yeah, exactly.
To have a free knee brace.
Yeah. And then it goes on to say, if you want one, you can even get a back brace for no cost to you. Not, you know, do you have back problems? Does your doctor say that you need a back brace? No. You just get a hold of us. We'll take care of everything. You get yourself a free back brace.
Wow.
Now, a legitimate doctor will tell you that, I mean, there are legitimate uses for knee braces and back braces. I'm not saying that there's no legitimate uses for them. But if you use them under any circumstances other than when you really need them.
It's something that really needs to be supervised by a doctor.
Yeah, because what you actually do, it's just like being bedridden. The muscles, what's the word I'm thinking of? Yeah, the muscles actually stop functioning, and then pretty soon you actually have to have that brace on.
Yeah, exactly. Wow, it's amazing to me, and that's the mentality that is that's brought about because of the fact that. We've been raised in this idea of you have to go to the doctor for everything. You have every ailment ever. You know, if somebody says, you've got heartburn. Oh, well, then you have acid reflux disease and you need to be on a medication every day of your life. You know, that's the answer. The answer is not, well, have you tried some knee strengthening exercises or have you tried maybe modifying your diet? No, take this pill, wear this brace. That's the solution.
One of these commercials, they huck their product and they say it's approved by Medicare, and then they have the testimonies, the actual old people who are saying that you need this, and one of them says, and this is an absolute quote, this is an absolute quote. He says, and he's got a nice Southern accent, so I'm not making fun of Southern people when I say this, but it's a Southern market here, so they use someone with a Southern accent. So he says, if you've got a brain in your head, and that's the line as to why you should buy this product. If you've got a brain in your head, in other words, hey, they're giving away free stuff. If you're not an idiot, you'd better get some.
Free stuff? Now, I like free stuff. Do you like free stuff? We should hang out.
Now, it might sound contradictory that we're saying here, you know, we're kind of making fun of them for all the old people wanting the free stuff and Medicare and everything, when we just got through saying that you should get everything you could get from the government. On the other hand, if your purpose is to crush government, then we should all be getting all the back braces we can get and then, put them in garage sales or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that's probably against the law. But if nothing else, you know, give them to Goodwill or something. Give them to Salvation Army and let them sell them for pennies on the dollar. Yeah. And just flood the market with cheap back braces and wheelchairs and whatnot.
Yeah, exactly.
There was a a person who thinks and comes up with ideas. It was actually a man and woman team, if I recall, in the 60s. That were, I believe they were communists, but whatever. Anyway, or they were socialists of some kind. But it was their theory and they pushed this very heavily, that if you want to change the government and get it to where they actually wanted revolution. They were saying this openly, that they wanted revolution. And the way to do that is to crush the existing system by getting as many people dependent on it as possible and just financially break it. That's kind of what you were talking about with the Soviet Union.
Yeah, well, it's a valid method. You know, it has been used to crush many empires over the years.
So you're getting ready to go hike the Appalachian Trail.
I am, yes. Counting down the days.
Do you have a specific day that you're planning on that, on starting that?
It looks like it's going to be probably the 4th. Probably the 4th of March, which is a little bit early. Most people don't start until the beginning of April, but I would rather hike a little bit slower and begin in colder weather than try to rush and wait for warmer weather.
Well, it shouldn't be too cold in March because it starts where, in Georgia or Alabama?
Georgia. Yeah, at the north, it's pretty northern Georgia, but it is really high elevation too. So.
Well, really high. Come on.
Really high for the East Coast.
It's the Appalachians. They're old and worn out.
Hey, don't knock them, man. They're the oldest mountains in the world.
Are they really?
Yeah, they really are. They were around when all of the continents were one big continent.
Gondwanaland,
or yeah, I don't know what it was called, but yeah.
Speaking of olden times, you were talking about during the break. You were talking about the Big Bang.
Yes. I saw this show with Stephen Hawking, and he was talking about how the only thing that kept the universe from basically being nothing, being just a sea of formless, energy, matter. I don't know. I'm not a physicist. I don't know the terms that they used. But it was the fact that there is an inherent chaoticness to the universe that keeps anything from being perfect. So that imperfection allowed gravity to take hold and basically force the atoms to move and bump into each other and start making stars and stuff.
Because one of the flaws in the theory of the Big Bang theory, one of the flaws of it is that in a normal situation where you would have something happening like is thought to have happened in the Big Bang, everything would be an equilateral distance from everything else.
Exactly.
Because it would all scatter out with the exact same amount of energy. So everything would be
because of gravity. Gravity would be exuding the exact same force on everything, so it would keep it apart. And
yeah,
they said
and no,
that.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, and they said that because of the fact that it is imperfect and there are flaws in kind of that matrix, that gravity would affect some areas differently, and it would cause things to begin moving, bumping into each other, and doing that crazy stuff that it does and makes the universe.
And so that caused you to think about my 50% theory.
Yeah, your plug theory, your 50% theory. Because if there is an inherent chaoticness to the universe, my thought is that another force in the universe, like gravity, or there are a couple of other ones that I don't remember, but is chaos another one? Is an inherent inability to have something be perfect an actual physical force in the universe? And if that is the case, that would certainly explain why central planning cannot work. Because you can't factor in that chaos force.
Even if it was possible, let's say like the Venus Project people who are utopian anarchists, socialist anarchists, they believe that they can somehow make this perfect computer with this perfect program, and the perfect computer with the perfect program will tell them exactly how to perfectly divide up all goods and services and who should work doing what jobs and how much rice they should be given for their daily allotments and all this kind of thing. And so they believe that they can come up with this magic computer to perfectly create social order and centrally plan everything and have a perfect society. But what you're saying is basically a laws of the universe may mean that that is absolutely impossible.
Exactly. Exactly. It may literally be physically impossible and breaking the laws of physics to centrally plan something perfectly.
I think it was Stefan Molyneux, in reference to the Venus Project, that basically debunked them by just saying, really? Where's the computer?
Right.
But then he took way too much time and effort and was on a back and forth debate with the cult leader that runs the Venus Project. And he wasted, in my opinion, way too much time dealing with those people. I just ban them. They just irritate me. I just ban them.
I have a tendency to laugh and then ignore. It could be, it's so ridiculous. It's just so ridiculous.
Yeah. I made the mistake. Well, I don't know if it was a mistake. One of the Venus Project people dropped over on the Bad Quaker Facebook page the other day and started spouting his,
cult?
His cult nonsense. And before I banned him, I made the observation that, you know, this is the product of public high school economics. You know, they think that way, like central planning can work. And if we just divided everything up equally, this would all work. They know nothing about the price mechanism. They're never taught anything about Mises. They don't understand capitalism in any way. You know, they're taught that corporatism is capitalism. And so I made this smart aleck remark that that's what, you know, public high schools produce. And then I clicked on the guy's profile, and lo and behold, he's in public high school.
Nice.
who'd have guessed?
Who'd have thunk it?
But he went on rambling with his, cult nonsense, so I went ahead and banned him anyway.
Yeah, I just I don't understand how anyone can legitimately think that central planning is the solution to anything. I mean, have you never seen committees? Have you never seen the product of a committee? Have you never driven on a road? Have you nothing that central planning produces ever works out, ever? So
well, we've hit.
Why would you continue to use it?
Well, we've hit our 20-minute mark, so I need to break and save this file, and we'll be right back with more with Ben and Kai.
Would you like to do something to support BadQuaker.com? Here's how easy it is. If you're already going to buy something from Amazon, go to BadQuaker.com first. Click on any of the buttons for Amazon. Once at Amazon, shop like you normally would. You'll pay the same price for the things you buy from Amazon, but Amazon will give BadQuaker.com a tiny portion of that purchase. It's amazingly easy to shop at Amazon, it won't cost you any extra, and you'll be supporting BadQuaker.com. Thank you! BadQuaker.com uses HostGator as our web hosting service. It was fast and easy to get set up, and the support we receive is top-notch. They have helpful and friendly 24/7, 365 live technical support and a 99.9% uptime guarantee, and they have some of the best prices in the business. If you have a website, or if you want to have a website, check them out by going to BadQuaker.com and click on the button for HostGator. And thank you very much for supporting BadQuaker.com.
Thanks for sticking with us through the break. My name is Ben Stone on the Bad Quaker Show with my co-host, Kai.
Hello.
And before the last break, I kind of mentioned it, but then we went on and talked about the other stuff, that I have this 50% rule that I've talked about a couple times. I'm not sure that have I ever clearly explained it on the show, or have I just referred to it?
I'm not sure if you have or not, actually.
Okay, well, I'll go through it real quick and pollute people's mind with it, and we'll see how that goes. The idea is, if this will work with a USB cable, or it will work with an electric plug that only has two plugs, like the American-style two-plug electric plug. They're different in Europe.
Smaller than the other?
Yeah, one of the plugs is slightly larger than the other. One is slightly smaller, and they'll only fit into the plug into the receptacle in one direction. And the same is true with a USB cable. You start to plug it in, and it will only go in one direction. It won't go. You can't turn it over. Now, so if you begin to notice and keep a mental count of every time that you start to plug in a USB cable or a two-plug electrical cable, and you intentionally don't look and see whether you're plugging it in right side up or upside down, if you just grab it and try to plug it in without looking at it, it should be a 50-50 proposition of right to wrong, of failures to a successful rate of attempting to plug it in. But what you find is about a 60-65% failure rate. Now, that's impossible. The odds should be 50%. Now there's going to be variables, so and it's going to be on a bell curve. So sometimes you're going to be 70% bad, sometimes you're going to be 30% bad. But the overall, it should work out at 50% one way or the other, right?
Right.
But it doesn't. It still comes out about 60-65% fail rate. Now,
right.
And the skeptic might say, well, you're just noticing the bad ones because when it happens good, you don't think about it. It's only when it happens wrong that you pause and go, oh, I've got it upside down. But really be honest with yourself and test yourself. And you know, Kai, we didn't even mention that you're my daughter in this one. I guess we've done this so many times that we assume that the listeners all know that you're my daughter and that we're the only a father-daughter anarchist team in the known universe. Podcasting, that is, that we know of. Anyway, but you know that this has been a running thing among our family for years, and we kind of like celebrate each time that, specifically for me, each time that I plug it in, I announce to the room, you know, upside down, 50% rule, or I do it and say it right. And I'm just as willing to say it when it's right as I am when it's wrong. And yet it's still, So it's not that I only notice the bad ones. I've been doing this long enough that I say it every time almost, that, you know, aha, I won that one. You know, it's almost like a contest.
Right.
But if my theory is, if you could set up a true double-blind test of this, where you would have to have the following circumstances. The person being tested could not know that they were being tested, because if the person knows they're being tested, there's a possibility they're going to distort the test by looking at least once in a while. So the person can't know that they're being tested. Second, there has to be filmed evidence of each attempt,
right?
So that there can be no dispute later on. And you have to have an actual 50-50 possibilities, like with a plug, and it can't affect positively or negatively any other person. So, for instance, if we were testing this 50-50 rule by flipping a coin where I was going against you and you were going against me, then one of us can win and one of us can lose. Well,
right.
My theory is that distorts the test. So for the test to be true, there can't be a winner and a loser. This has to be a true neutral test. And so you could tell the person, like the person you're testing, you could have them in a room and you could tell them you're being tested on, you know, how well you can do these mouse clicks. And so they sit down at the computer and you're like, they start to do it. And then, oh, what do you know? The mouse is flawed. Well, here's another mouse. Just reach back there and plug it in. And they reach behind a thing with a USB. Exactly. And they try to plug it in blind without being able to know whether it's right side up or upside down. Now, if you could do that, and you could do that, say, you know, 1,500 times with 1,500 different people, then you could do a thorough double-blind test of this and test my theory.
Right.
But my theory comes down to the fact that there's something wrong in the universe.
So if there are any, you know, but behavioral psychologists or anything that get government funding at their colleges that want to do that, let's go for it.
Yeah, you could totally hire me as a consultant.
Yeah, of course. I'd run that test.
Oh, man. Well, we have a few minutes left.
Randy to do that test.
I'm not sure what his health is like. He's quite old.
Old, isn't he?
And he, yeah, I can't remember his age, but he was having some real serious health problems a few years back, so I'm not sure. Now, we have a few minutes left in the podcast. Do you want to break out the Walter Block doll and the Ron Paul doll and beat up some straw men?
Yay! Kids, time to get out your Walter Block doll.
And I say that teasing because at the topic at hand, I'm not really sure where Walter Block stands on it. I haven't seen or heard him ring in on the topic one way or the other. So I don't mean to put words in his mouth. And he's certainly someone that I have a lot of respect for. He's done some great work for the Liberty Movement over the years. And he has. In my podcast yesterday, where I beat up on Ron Paul, I read a whole chapter of his book, Defending the Undefendable, because in that chapter, it specifically lays out that you don't have a right to your reputation. And that's one of the arguments that Ron Paul, his attorneys are making as to why he should be able to just seize ronpaul.com away from the rightful owners, is because it affects Ron Paul's reputation. And yet Walter Block, Ron Paul's good friend, argues in his book that you don't have a right to your reputation. Your reputation is based on what other people think about you, and you don't have a right to control what other people think.
Yeah. I think this whole situation is really sad. I was really, really hoping that once Ron Paul was finished with the whole political career thing, that he would step up and, I mean, because he's basically been an anarchist for years, you know, all of the things that he's said, all of his books and things are so anarchist. And I was really hoping that he would be like, you know what, see, I tried to do it within the means of the system. It doesn't work. This whole system doesn't work. I was really hoping that he would come out with that. And to see him do a complete 180, do a complete 180 and go in the opposite direction is really sad.
Yeah, and one of the excuses that's always made, I mentioned this yesterday on the podcast, one of the excuses that's always made is, well, he didn't know. These are his attorneys doing this on his behalf. He doesn't know. Well, that's getting a little thin. I'm tired of hearing the excuse that it's Ron Paul's entourage that does these things.
Well, if that's the case, he needs to get a better entourage.
Well, he never seems to, though. He always seems to be surrounded with people who are getting blamed for stuff constantly.
Yeah.
But then so did Nixon.
Yeah.
You know? So did Bill Clinton.
Bush, Obama, every politician. Every politician, every celebrity, everybody. If something is wrong, you get a swarm of publicists coming out to blame everybody but that person.
Yeah, exactly. It wasn't Michael Jackson's fault that he was a drug addict and he died of an overdose. It was the doctor's fault.
Yeah.
It's pretty sad. He really should. Well, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. I don't understand what is going through his mind, you know, to think that it's a good idea to use the UN to seize a website, and
also,
that would go over.
That the UN has the power to seize a website?
That, yeah, exactly.
I have an issue with.
Exactly.
I mean, this is a U.S.-based website run by people from the U.S. about a United States politician, and he's going to the UN? Why would he do that? That doesn't make any sense.
Well, that's the governing body that makes these decisions, and then they recommend it to, there's another private company that basically runs the domain name service or whatever it's called. I can't remember the letters that stand for it and everything, but they will take the recommendations of this UN agency. And so, I mean, if you're going to seize somebody's website, that's the legal means of doing it. That's how you do it. It's just, why would your first reaction be, hey, I think I'll just take legal action and seize this? Why wouldn't you, you know, drop the guys an email and say, hey, can we work together? Can we maybe move some of your content? Can we, you know, I don't know why.
Can I buy your website and keep you on as webmasters or, I mean,
yeah,
anything. Also, it's Ron Paul's fault for not getting for not getting ronpaul.com earlier. You know,
yeah,
Coca-Cola had to buy Coca-Cola.com, and you know, any big business has to, if they are not quick enough to get their domain name, they have to buy it from somebody who has it. That's how the internet works. So, Ron Paul, if you want that website, write him a check. We all know you have the money.
Yeah, really.
We gave it to you. Well, I didn't give it to him, but.
You greedy, greedy person.
Yeah, well.
It kind of vindicates everything that the anarchists have been saying for years about Ron Paul, though, that he's really not one of us, that he's, you know, that he's only riding on the coattails of people like Rothbard and things like that.
I
hate to say this, but it really disturbs me when people like Lou Rockwell and Walter Block and people like that support Ron Paul so vigorously, when this just seems so apparent to me. It seems so obvious to me.
And what kills me is the fact that, you know, he turns around and he does something like this when he doesn't win. What would have happened if he would have won? If we would have given him the power of the United States military and the position of the President of the United States, if you have so little conviction in what you're saying that you immediately turn around and break it for a domain name, what are you going to do when you have Monsanto knocking at your door trying to convince you to join them?
Yeah, exactly. Would he have continued his fight against the Fed and then handed over the money supply to the UN?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah.
I assume not, but...
But you never know.
Who would have guessed he would have used the UN to attack a website and seize a domain? Who would have guessed that?
Yep.
Well, since I've already done a whole podcast on that, we probably shouldn't bore the listeners with more talk about that.
Yeah.
In our last 5 minutes, we should talk about something uplifting and happy.
Yeah, and not like we normally do and get on a topic that we're like, oh, and now we're out of time. We'll talk about that next time and then never talk about it again.
And right before we reveal the secret of the world that's going to solve everything. Oh, look at that. We're out of time.
Tune in next time. Same bad Quaker channel.
Actually, Batman is one of the the old campy Batman shows from the 60s is one of the is one of the regulars on that MeTV network that I was talking about earlier.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
with
they
Adam
have Batman.
West.
Yeah, yeah. The Green Hornet, they have, you get to see, what's his name, Bruce Lee, when he was about 19 or something, jumping around, giving karate chops. It was a funny thing there back in the 60s and early 70s. There was this general belief in Hollywood that that you could give someone a karate chop to the side of the neck, and they would instantly be, passed out or whatever. It was really funny. It popped up constantly in the 60s and 70s.
Well, I mean, that's the general idea of the Vulcan nerve grip. It's just a little bit more calm.
Yeah, more refined.
Yeah, it's that same idea, though, which is really kind of ridiculous.
It really was. But, you know, Hollywood tends to do that. They get something stuck. And another thing your mom and I observed with watching these old shows is the concussion thing. You get hit in the head and suddenly you lose your memory. And then if it's a comedy-based 60s TV show, another hit in the head can restore your memory.
Yes. In fact, it is the only way to restore your memory.
Although, you know, in reference, and your mom just clarified this over behind me, comparing all those stupid 60s and 70s TV programs to today's reality TV and you know, all that's on TV now, as bad as that old stuff was, it's still better than watching the modern TV.
This is true. This is very true. And a lot of those things that we're talking about are still elements in television today.
The losing your memory by hitting the head and that kind
of
thing?
Yeah, all of that.
See, I don't watch current TV, so I don't even know about that.
I don't watch a whole lot of current TV either, but, you know, I can take faith in that Hollywood doesn't ever let go of anything. That's why you still have people shooting sideways, despite the fact that pretty much everybody in the universe knows that you can't shoot anything that way.
That is true. And they're still, you know, they every time they have a shotgun in their hand, they're, you know, they're running round after round onto the floor.
Yeah.
They're
constantly pumping the rifle or pumping the shotgun, and you're just kicking your bullets right out.
Yeah. And they still have, you know, Hollywood movies where you shoot 15 or 18 times from a 6-shot revolver.
Yeah.
The typical standard stuff. Or
or the guy gets shot and goes flying backwards.
Yeah. Or every single time a car is seen in a scene, the tires are screaming, or, you know, all it takes is every car that ever crashes blows up, all that kind of stuff.
Yep. Well, I think we've about hit our limit, haven't we?
We have, and it's kind of weird doing these recordings with me on the road and you back in Ohio in a house.
I know, you know? It's very strange.
But it is.
Unfortunately, here in just a couple weeks, I'm probably not going to be able to have a podcast or do a podcast with you for a couple months.
How long do you expect to be on the trail, on the Appalachian Trail?
I'm hoping for 4 months. I'm planning for 6 months.
6 months. Yuck.
Like I said, I'm hoping for 4, but I'm planning for 6. So maybe it'll turn out 5.
Okay, well, we better sign off and let people go and download something other than our podcast. Maybe they can get over and get a Freedom Fiends podcast and listen to that one, too. Or maybe an Anarchy Gumbo podcast. Or maybe, who else?
Angel
Some
Clark
other
Show.
Podcast. Yeah, we haven't given a shout-out to Angel Clark in a long time. Hi, Angel.
Hi, Angel.
Okay, thanks for coming on the show with me, Kai.
All right, folks, I will talk to you later.
Folks, be sure and get over to badquaker.com, where liberty is our mission. Thanks a lot.